Hey everyone, this is John Puritz. Welcome to the Man Up Already podcast. This show is dedicated to each of us being better in all areas of our lives, mentally, spiritually, physically, and relationally. We want to help you be a better you because when you man up already, the world around you is greatly impacted. Here on the podcast, we don't believe you're an accident. We believe each of us is created for purpose, and this show is dedicated to helping you discover and live out that purpose. Again, welcome to the show, and let's check out another great episode. All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Man Up Already podcast. Super excited to have you back here with us, and we've got another great, exceptional guest and a great show ahead. But before we dive into that, I want to just share with you there are so many wonderful things happening on manupalready.com. The first is every podcast episode is on there. So you can just go to the site. There's you can download a free copy of The Power of Your Posse from the Man Up Already book. You can get the Man Up Already book. If you click on podcasts, you can get all of the episodes on there. They link right to Spotify. And if you are an active listener, whatever your channel you're listening on, you know, please like, share, et cetera. We'll talk about that later. But also under the merch section of the Man Up Already website, you can get this shirt. If you're seeing me on YouTube right now, the Man Up Already t-shirt is out and available for purchase. And, you know, if you're a supporter of the podcast, you're a supporter of the movement. And the more we get people to go, what is Man Up Already? The better, because we stand for something here, right? We stand for something that's greatly under attack. And I think that's more evident today than ever on just kind of what's happening out there, and something that I think we can pay more attention to for sure. So check that out. Go to manupalready.com. And also coming soon, February 24th, 2024 is the next Man Up Already Growth Conference in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Super excited. Florida. You just got a little glimpse of my New York. Super pumped for that. More details to come. And also, when you go to the site, please, 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 please register with your email address so that we can contact you, keep you apprised of everything happening. Get on our email list, please, so that we can keep you informed of everything happening here. I'm super pumped to bring up our guest today. Our guest, I'll share a little story. A previous guest, Clint Murray, Clint had said, hey, you got to really get to know this guy, Brett. He's got an incredible story. Brett had coached Clint, but what he shared with me was how Brett had coached Clint during one of the most tragic times of Brett's life. And I said, oh, okay, let's meet. And I met up with Brett and just had an absolutely incredible conversation. He is the author of the book, Born, Love, Die. He's going to talk about it. I'm not going to talk about it here on what's in this book. But I said to Brett, I said, you know what, man, before I have you on the podcast, I want to read the book. And then let's have you on, because the story that he shared with me was so absolutely incredible. And having read the book, I'm super pumped to bring him here today. A little bit about Brett. He is the founder and president of Brett Best Life Global. He's out of North Carolina. He has published 3 books, Born, Love, Die, From Autopilot to Authentic, and Living at the Summit. He is a coach. He is a PhD. He's well-trained. He's an exceptional dude, does great things for people. And, you know, I always encourage you to go find out about our guests rather than me give a full complete bio here. I think having people on speaks in of itself as to who we're bringing to you. Brett is an incredible guy with an incredible story and somebody I really think you should know. So please welcome our guest today, Brett Blair. All right, Brett, good to have you, man.
Hi, John. Glad to be here.
Yeah, what a pleasure and an honor. I got to tell you, you know, I remember Clint, you know, talking about, you know, you got to meet this guy, and you know, there, I get that a lot, right? Like you just meet people, but your story was so out of the box, I guess, you know, out of the norm in how you approach what you walk through. And I want you to talk about it here. But I was super pumped to read the book. And then just reading your book, I literally was like, would I have the strength to come out on the other side like that? And that's another thing I really want to talk about is just how you did that. But good to have you. It really is an honor and a privilege. So our audience probably has not read, write your book, Born, Love, Die. So maybe you can kind of talk about what that was birthed out of in the middle of incredible tragedy. And you are what I would call an expert at adversity.
Okay. Well, thank you. Yeah. So yeah, the book is a kind of a memoir of what I call the year of ALS. But back in April of 2020, my wife, and we've been married 9 years then, perfectly healthy. We ran 2 half marathons a year together. She didn't take any medicine for anything. Strong Kristen. One day her hand started cramping, and a little later her right leg, she hurt her leg on the treadmill. And about a month later, she was diagnosed with ALS.
And she was how old?
She was 51.
Yeah.
Lou Gehrig's disease. And it's like, and I was with her at the doctor's office when she diagnosed her. And it was like, you have ALS. It was like unthinkable words to hear. And then she died a year later. And I took care of her that year. And that year was just so deeply transformative in so many different ways. And so I journaled through it, and I'm glad I did, because my journal had a record of real things that happened that I forgot, because I don't like to remember hard things. And then the journey was so transformative for me, as I decided to write a book about it for a couple of reasons. One, to not forget the lessons I learned, and also to maybe help some other people going through a similar thing. And it was really weird when I was, before she was diagnosed, I was towards the end of getting my PhD in psychology. And I had to come up with a dissertation topic. I've been curious about resilience forever. But so I chose to do a qualitative study on resilience. And when I was in the beginning phases of analyzing my research, she was diagnosed with this disease. It's like God said, all right, smarty pants, take this one on. Because it was the biggest resilience challenge I've ever faced.
I mean, you know, and I know this, and just to hear you even talk about it still for me is unfathomable, right? It's like you don't really realize what you're capable of as a person and what you can push through until you're in those moments and you have to push through, right?
Totally.
But you what the audience doesn't know is you were dealing with your mom. I mean, before all this happened, you had to take care of your mom and all of her issues, and she was in another state, had to move her up to your state and then move her back afterwards, right? And then through all of this, you're completing your doctorate while dealing with the passing of your wife over an extended and being caregiver and all that. I think that's the thing that I want people to know most, is that you can get through these moments, but how you are, who and how you deal with it and who you are on the other side is what's really important. So my question for you is, did you know, somewhere in the middle of all these things, was it a conscious thought on who you were going to be on the other side of it versus yes. just getting buried in your circumstance?
No, let me back up. We were blessed to, we knew the disease. Kim, her name is Kim, my wife. We had helped friends of ours go through the same journey. Theirs lasted 7 years. She was like 27 and pregnant and had a 3-year-old when her husband was diagnosed with ALS. And 7 years later, he passed. And we, Kim and I, were really close that whole journey. So we knew it really well. It was terrible. And, mm-hmm. and I watched closely how he went through the disease until his death. And I watched his wife And then 3 years later, my wife is diagnosed with the exact same thing. And I made a decision. Actually, Kim made it with me to not let it ruin me. Like we both knew the disease, and we knew what it could do to the caregiver, and not just my, and Kim, we were both strong Christians. She shifted quickly to thinking about heaven. She knew she was going to heaven. Thank God she had that kind of faith. And so she shifted to that, but she was more worried about me as a man taking care of her and then being without her later. She told me that several times. So I made a decision early on that I was going to be a great caregiver, the best I could be, and also take care of myself so that I could come out of this later with life, not be done. Mm-hmm. I was also aware, you know, sometimes people say when crappy things happen, why me? And I think I read this somewhere, but why not me? Like it struck me, I'm getting my PhD in resilience, basically. And I've been through a lot of stuff. Everybody has, but I've been through my share of stuff. So I had confidence that I could get through it if I went about it in the right way and come out of it not only whole, but maybe in many ways better. I miss her forever. We had the best marriage, but things happened in me that made me a better human through that journey. And I think I could see the future that was a possibility early in the journey of the disease.
I remember, and I want to touch on trauma because it was a trauma for me that I did not have the skills for, and buried that trauma for 10 years. But I remember when my dad was dying. So my dad got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and it took him in a month and a half.
Oh boy.
And I was 38.
How old was he?
He was 63.
Okay. And you were 38?
Yeah.
Okay.
I remember the phone call. I remember all of it. I remember being on a plane to go be with him at the end. And I remember, you know, I had heard a while back, and I love what you talk about, that there's this experience that you went through that so many people, they do go through traumatic experiences and they don't know how to handle trauma, and it derails their life. And thankfully I had been given some skills, and one of them was the understanding that nothing has any meaning but the meaning we give it, right? That we really do get to choose how these things are. We can't control the thing, but we get to choose how we're going to process the thing. And I remember being on the plane to go deal with my father's death, going, what am I going to let this define me as, you know? And just that allowed me to be there for him. But afterwards, I didn't have the skills to process it, you know, as a relatively young man losing his father, a key figure in my life. And, you know, so I'm also very passionate about trauma and how it affects us and how we can equip ourselves. I just released a podcast episode yesterday with Pastor Rick Craig on preparing for the end. And so this is an interesting, you know, that we're having this conversation because he talks about having a team. Like I didn't know at that time, right? Like my dad's got cancer, how fast it was going to take him. Nobody did, right? But even in your book, you talk about there were people that came in to help you navigate this process. But who you are in the trauma, like you said, can determine who that person's going to be coming on the other side of it.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of Viktor Frankl in Man's Search for Meaning. I read that forever ago, but you know, he was a POW, or he was in Auschwitz in the prison camps in Germany in World War II. And he lost everybody, his family, his kids, his wife, but he lived, and he created a vision for his future in his mind that gave him the strength to not die when others were dying around him. And then he came later and became a major psychologist and all. But in many ways, my journey of caregiving for my wife felt like I was in prison camp. We hunkered down. I mean, COVID was happening, but it was like COVID was for everybody else. We were literally in our apartment one day at a time. living what was left of her life. And it felt like prison camp. I never told her that, but I thought, I want to be Viktor Frankl. Like, I want to grow through this, be a great caregiver, but have another chapter or two afterwards.
Yeah.
So it's available. There's a thing called post-traumatic growth. I've been curious about resilience, but resilience is technically returning to where you were. And most of us, like 3/4 of people, are already equipped to come back after a difficulty. There's a percent of people who will be damaged forever, 10 or 15%. By the way, my first wife took her own life. So that's an example of a person who gave up. And then there's a percent of people that will grow through tragedy. And part of that growth is genetic, and part of it is developable. And I knew that before my wife was diagnosed with this disease. So I wanted to be one who could develop the skills and hopefully also have the genes, but like do things on purpose to be more resilient than some other people I saw who weren't.
Well, it's what I would call a teachable moment, Brett. So, and you're a doctor, so you're way smarter than me now. but what are those developable skills?
Yeah.
For our audience, like what have you learned that you can do?
I love to talk about this. Have you heard of positive psychology?
Sure.
Well, and forever I thought if you said positive psychology, it felt like kind of anecdotal stuff. But there's a real science around it. And there's a book called Flourish, written by Dr. Martin Seligman in 2011, that I read. Just, I don't know why I read it. And I was running a recruiting company then. And it like light bulbs went off. This book called Flourish, it talks about a science of positive psychology, that you can do things in your life to increase the odds that you are happy and healthy and productive now and into the future. Better physical health, better emotional health, better relational health. And he talks about a theory called PERMA, the PERMA theory of flourishing. There are five things in PERMA. P, positivity. If you will grow in positivity, and there's actually a book written called Positivity by a professor at UNC, Barbara Fredrickson. If you can grow in positivity, you're statistically more likely to have better health, physical and emotional, than people who don't. It's not, and there's proof of this because they've done scientific studies on it. The E in PERMA is engagement, which means flow. Get more often, do things where time just disappears on you. Like you, whether it's music or writing or art, whatever it is that you get into flow, do that more often. That's called engagement. The R in PERMA are relationships, and specifically positive relationships. You talk about your tribe, but you surround yourself with positive people who will encourage you, that will statistically make your life better. The M in PERMA is meaning. This is where my faith is. I'm a strong Christian, but living a life, recognizing there's more to it than this physical walk on this rock with other people, that there's something bigger than us. That's meaning. And the A in PERMA is achievement or accomplishment. I call that setting goals and never stopping growing. So if you organize your life around getting more positive, being in flow more often, surround yourself with positive people, have meaning in your life, in my case it's faith, and continue to set goals, you will build resilience. It's a fact. So I was like, oh, cool. So I'm an engineer originally. I have a spreadsheet on how I'm growing in PERMA. And then, yeah, so that's how you can prepare for trauma. And then when trauma happens, it was interesting. I was doing dissertation research on this when my wife was diagnosed, and five themes came out of my research. And I was studying how men go through being laid off from their jobs, which seems kind of a goofy little topic. But what I found through my research was phenomenal. It was the same thing repeated over and over and over in all my participants. And they were, when trauma happens, and you have to give yourself time to get over it. You can't just jump from losing your wife or losing your dad or losing your job to tomorrow being whole again. You have to give yourself time. I call that you have to go through a dark journey. Mm. Now, how dark depends on the person, but you have to go through a dark journey. The second theme that came out of my research, which is, I love this, it was fascinating, was every one of these participants in my research found it to be a blessing in disguise. In this case, they lost the job that they loved. But looking back on it later, they were thankful that that happened to them because it forced them into a journey of questioning what's important. And they grew as men, as husbands, as fathers, as leaders. They were better humans having gone through that difficult period. The third theme in my research was leaning heavily on your children and your spouse to get through the thing. Now, these were corporate executives who happened to lose their job because their division got sold, yet they took it so personally that they were crushed by it. And their kids at home, whether little kids or teenage kids or adult kids, were holding dad up. Like, dad, you got this. I know you. Instead, I would have predicted the other way around, that the men would hold their families together. No, the families held the dad up. Mm. I leaned heavily on my son's 33, but he was my rock through this whole journey of losing my wife. But the fourth theme in my research, and I used to own a recruiting company, so I love this one. I call it the importance of your professional relationships, but 11 out of the 12 participants in my study found their next job through somebody they already knew. I love that. Now, they never started there. That was like the last thing they did was tell their neighbor that they were unemployed. But their neighbor's brother had a perfect job for them. And then the last thing in my research was meaning. The every one of these men made sure that the job they took, now they were in their mid-50s, but they made sure that they took a job that was more meaningfully connected to something outside of just money and title, like where they can make a difference in the world. So all these themes were coming to me as my wife was getting more and more paralyzed and more close to death. And it hit me that these findings that I'm uncovering are my roadmap. Mm. Could be a roadmap for me to get through my trauma of my case, losing my wife. So I literally applied them to my own journey through it. And it worked. It worked for me. And it's just only had 12 participants. It was a qualitative study, but I think it's good advice. And I'm a type 7 on the Enneagram. I do not like facing sadness and dark things. I want to jump to next shiny object. And so my nature is not to allow time to recover. My nature is to cover up with work and trips and be excited with stuff. But I knew better. I took a whole year off after she died of no work, a lot of time alone. We traveled by myself a lot and with good friends a lot. And counter to my own nature, I gave myself better medicine of slow down. So anyway, that's some of the frameworks that I've.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have this conversation now. I literally just put a post on LinkedIn, and I'll put it on my other social media on, you know, I do something called the ride along where I'm riding a bike and I just talk about what's on my mind. And I was talking about there are moments where you have to step back to regroup so that you can surge forward where, you know, like this time of year where you and I are recording this here towards the end of October, in the last quarter of the year, you hear, you know, push. You hear, hey, get all you can, set up the next year. And I'm sitting here going, I'm gassed, right? Like I'm in a moment of, there's a lot of unexpected adversity this year, a lot of dealing with the death of a lot of people. And I'm like, you know, I write every day, respect self-care. Because what you're talking about is you can't just, like I learned the hard lesson of burying that trauma down. And it took me a decade just to get back to what you were talking about, like just to wake up again, right? And you, I certainly don't want to repeat that, but I think it's important for people to know that there are seasons where for you it was a year, and to not judge it, to not put parameters on it, right? It, like if you need to step back to get where you need, you know, to the things that you need so that you can come back. I love what you talked about, to have meaning and purpose, right? But also I want to talk about the blessing in disguise. There are moments in life where you've got to pull back, you know, to be able to move forward. So many people, I think, would listen to this and go, the death, and certainly the death of my spouse or a family member or having to be caregiver and all that, how could you call that a blessing? But I love what you said. I'm a better human being because of the experience. And it's the idea that the lessons that we learn in life that make us better aren't always in the good times. If anything, the biggest lessons are in the hard times.
100%. 100%. Want me to share with you some of my blessings?
I'd love, that's why you're here, buddy.
Thanks. I didn't know I could do it, but when you're dealt the assignment, you just step in and do it. So I was close, right in front of my dying wife's face every day for a year. She knew she was going to die. I knew she was going to die. Nobody's not died from this disease. So what do you do in that? Well, we shifted to making the best of every day. We literally had an agreement to do that. And that close to this other human who I watched smile every day, literally, she smiled until the day she died, and she died of dehydration. She knew she was going to heaven. She unflinchingly knew that. And she was more concerned with other people than herself. When people would come visit, she was all about them. And I got to watch that. And it was just fascinating, the love and the faith and the ability to be joyful in the face of such adversity was just crazy. And it started out as a coping mechanism, but it turned into an aha I had. One morning I went out, and we were on the ninth floor of a tall apartment building in downtown Durham facing east. So I got to watch the sunrise every morning. And I went up, she would sleep in because her disease progressed. She slept more and more. So I'd go out in the early in the morning before sun came up with my coffee and my Bible and my journal. And I'd sit there and look out waiting for the sun to come. And I remember one morning I was out there and I started thinking about our marriage, and it was great. I mean, I was in not a good marriage first. So I knew what a good marriage was, and it was amazing. And I just started doing a mind movie of all the great things that we had done. And I just started sobbing in tears, knowing that was over. Like, to think about the past was so hard. It just made me fall apart. So I thought, I got to do something else. So I thought, okay, I'll think about the future. So then I shifted to the future. And then I did a mind movie of her becoming more paralyzed every day. And eventually, she either wouldn't be able to breathe or wouldn't be able to eat, and she would die. And then I'd be alone. And then I started crying again. It's like, so I kind of just shifted, literally shook my head and I looked out, and the sun was starting to poke up. It's like this orange glow over the horizon. And I saw some birds flying around and clouds in the sky, and I could hear the city starting to wake up with traffic, and a train came by. I took a deep breath and I looked up, and a smile came to my face. I'm like, whew, it's not so bad right here. Like, here in this present moment is actually not bad. Not bad at all. She's asleep. The disease is not one where you're wretched in pain. It's just kind of a slow paralyzing. And I realized the present moment's a pretty cool place. And then, like, later, not that morning, but I thought, you know, that's not just a coping mechanism. I think this is a philosophy I want to carry on with later after she dies, because it's just so good. And then I was having to work on my dissertation. My advisor at the university begged me to take a leave of absence. And she had a cousin who died of ALS, and she could not imagine me doing both caregiving and finishing up my dissertation. And I told her, I think if I do that, I'll never come back and finish it. So I want to get it done. Please help me get it done faster. So when Kim would be napping or with our nurse, I would go to my computer and work on my dissertation. And I got like five times more done in an hour than I ever did before. And I realized I can like make my brain get into flow by being here now more than ever before. I want to keep that skill later. So I guess the blessing in disguise for me is I say I feel gravity. And like right now, I feel my feet on the ground pulling me down. And I didn't used to. My mind was always in the future or the past before, but now it's here more. I'm not perfect, but I'm more often here now. And here now is a much better place to be. It's more joyful. Of course, all the books say this. I'm not inventing anything. I'm just experiencing it. And so I don't want to lose that. And that's another reason I wrote this silly book, is I don't want to lose my own new appreciation for living in the present moment, not worrying about the future. It hadn't shown up yet, and not regretting the past. I've already learned from that mistake I made, and be here now. I'm better. I'm a better human, better in every direction. So,
and that was a big takeaway hearing, you know, reading your story. And I remember, you know, because you share in the book your journal entries and the concept of spirit, right? I'm a spiritual being having a physical reality, and all of these tools and things that you talk about in there. But my big takeaway, and it has been a running theme for me in a year of an inordinate amount of death, you know, witnessing what I've witnessed this year, of tomorrow is not promised for any of us. And more importantly, living in the past is not going to serve our present, right? Like we spend so much time as human beings, either in some future that we hope to achieve, right, or fear, and in the past regretting a lot of things, maybe that didn't happen or that we did, instead of who we are is who we are right in this moment. And we get to dictate what happens in that moment, no matter what's coming at us, right, through life. You can't control that stuff. And I think that has been the big lesson. And it's, I think when you get that, it's so freeing, Brett, at least for me, because I spent so much of my, I think my dad dying in my 30s, right, really rocked me. But a lot of my 40s was born out of that, like, well, who am I going to be? Like, can I, you know, am I going to make them proud? I'm going to take on all this responsibility. And it wasn't until COVID in my 50s and realizing all I have is right now. But you really, really confirmed that for me, at least. This is it today. I have today.
Yeah.
Who do I get to be today?
No. And by the way, it's not, this is all I have. This is awesome. Like, it's amazing how life unfolds if you're now here today. You know what right. I mean? And I, by the way, I'm not perfect at it, but I'm a whole lot better than I used to be.
Right. There's something, sorry, I'm going to cut you off.
I don't know what's coming to my mind right now, but, the book is titled Born, Love, Die, but it was originally called Born, Live, Die. And I want to kind of share with you and your audience how I came up with that title.
Yeah, please.
Because it gets into this notion of life is short. My shower in the morning became my little vacation. My time alone out on the balcony, and then I'd listen to podcasts or listen, sweep the kitchen, kind of waiting for her to wake up. And I'd take a shower. And our shower had tiles on the walls. And standing there in the hot water, looking ahead, thinking to myself, you know, what the blank, you know, this reality. I wake up to a nightmare. I don't go to sleep and have nightmares. You wake up to it every day. Every day she's a little bit more paralyzed, and every day a new struggle. And I looked up, and there's tiles in front of me, and I don't know why. I reached up and I just traced the tile from left to right, kind of feeling the grout. And I thought, this is like symbol of a life. Person's born, they live a while, and they die. And I thought, who can I remember? Whose funerals have I been to? And I thought, oh yeah, my grandma Bess, she was born, she lived, she died. And my uncle Joe, he was born, he lived to die. My little sister died of breast cancer. That was sad. Tracy, she was born, she lived a while, she died. My first wife's dad died. My first wife died. And Kim is alive. She's living, but she's going to die. And I just kind of back away, and there's all these tiles. And I thought, it's just kind of everybody dies. Like it kind of, and it's like, there's nobody's ever missed, avoided, including Jesus. Everybody has had a physical death, or they're going to, and everybody they know is, and their children are, and their great grandchildren. It's just this biological fact of, and I thought, I wonder how many billions of people have lived and died. And I didn't do the math on that, but it's just like this shifted it from this sad emotional thing you wrestle with to just a fact. It happens. And then I turned to the right to this wall and I traced one tile. I slapped it with both my hands and like, okay, this is me. I was born, I'm living, I'm going to die, but I haven't died yet. I'm here today. And it's Friday, October 20th. I'm here today with two hands representing the two parts of me. Part of me is spiritual. I look up and part of me is created by God in pure love, not a physical body, not on this time thing, pure energy, pure love, unaffected by ALS, unaffected by stress and exhaustion and all that. Pure, perfect love. And part of me is a physical being standing on gravity with a body that's going to die, taking care of Kim and taking care of myself. And I have a choice how I enter today. And I choose to enter it with love and joy and passion and be all I can. And I kind of slap the tiles, turn the water to cold for about a minute, shut the water off, dry off, and go into the day. And I did that every day. Mm-hmm. I write about it in my journal. And I was like, okay. I mean, I trace those tiles, born, live, die, born, live, die, born, live, die. It's just, I'm very empathetic when I hear about people with a terminal disease, but I also know it's going to happen to all of us. So I'm more, less freaked out by it. And I don't know, there's power in that kind of clarity. And then it hit me. We all, because the book is some advice, we all live between being born and being died. I'm making that mistake on purpose. But we have a choice how we do the thing in between. And the answer is love.
Mm.
Pure love is the answer. I think we struggle to get there. And I know every morning in the shower, I still do this. And I still pray to God to help me not forget who I am, that I'm made by a loving Father. And my assignment is to receive God's love and give it out. And I have everything else takes care of itself. All the details I'm able to manage without praying over them. But if I can remember more often that I'm created by a loving God, it's my assignment is to receive that love and give it out. My days are much, much better. Like it's kind of amazing. So I want to remind myself to love, not just live, but love. All that super spiritual stuff came to me in this sad journey. Another blessing in disguise.
There's so much there, Brett, that I'm not even going to touch it. I wanted to just sit. You said was amazing. But I do want to ask, Kim was a woman who understood who she was as a spirit and understood her life was going to end. And you and I are both men of faith. I think, what did you see or learn about perhaps when you know your physicality is going to end, stepping into your spirituality while you're still, the thing that really I got very present to in hearing Kim's story was you're mentally all there while your body shuts down, basically. And navigating that inside that prison must be very frustrating and that doesn't even come close. I guess, what did you learn about our spiritual? Because there's so many people out there that they're not connected spiritually the way you and I maybe think, you know, that they should be. And I think that concept today in our world and our society is under attack, you know, relentlessly right now. But we are spirit. We are created in love. And the tapping into that understanding gets you through so much of what we call sin is really the pain of a physical existence.
Yep.
So I would love to know your thoughts on that.
Yeah. I mean, I, 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 I watched her, without a doubt, the closest other human to her through this whole journey. She told me, she'd be sitting there thinking in her chair. She could talk for like 6 months of this journey. And I said, what are you thinking about? She goes, I'm thinking about heaven. She would smile. So as she lost her physical ability to move her arms and legs, when she could talk, she would talk to her friends or we'd watch movies. But when she was quiet, she would think about God, think about heaven. And she smiled when she thought about that. And then there was last couple of months, she couldn't talk at all. So I'm only guessing what she was thinking about. You're right. The disease does not affect your mind, and thankfully, nor your bowel movements. So you're able to like control your bowels and your brain. I mean, the brain part's at prison because you're completely aware of what's happening to the rest of your body. And it towards the end, when she was put on hospice, eventually she was on morphine and other drugs. And they tell me that she was not feeling anything. I sure hope they're right. But until then, she was feeling and knowing everything, including the hell of knowing you're going to die. But she was able to shift. I think her personal faith was a huge part of it. And then our decision to live each day like we were on vacation was another part of it, because we surrounded ourselves with friends and games and fun. We couldn't travel, but we did all the fun we could do, and including get drunk a couple times, like just, you know, it was, but mainly have a lot of friends over.
Yeah.
One thing I learned this with a disease like ALS, you know, everybody wants, well, every disease, but they want to help, but there's no way to help, but they want to help. You let them help is my advice. Let your friends help you because you're helping them because they want to help. And if you don't let them help you, you're hurting them. So we had a meal train going. We had food delivered every day. And as much as we could, we let the people come in and eat with us so they could be around Kim, even when she couldn't talk. She liked their energy. I would definitely advise that. So I know I'm bouncing around on you, but part was her own unique, undeniable faith. Part was her decision to let the outside world in, to like surround us, me too, with love, and to live each day with as much fun and joy and love as we could while her physical body was giving out.
That's powerful. It's powerful. Yeah, I encourage.
I hope if I get ALS, I'll be on Good Morning America because we'll be two of us in the same family. But
yeah,
there's a whole another subject. If I get ALS, I'm moving to Oregon.
Why Oregon?
Well, because you can legally not have to suffer as long.
Mm, wow.
Yeah, the whole end of life theme is a weird one. Where am I going to go? I hope I have the same faith and love and joy and all the good things she had when my time comes. Although I hope my time comes when I'm 115 and it's quick, but
yeah,
keep your show G rated, but
we're not G rated here.
I'm engaged and very happily in love. We're going to get married pretty soon. And I'm hoping when I'm 115 and she's 104, we both die in the same embrace. How's that?
I love it. So tell that story, Brett. I mean, you know, there's life on the other side of trauma. There is life on the other side of tragedy. So your fiance's name is?
Tatiana.
And so how did that all, you care to share that story?
Of course. No, I'm very thrilled about it. And it's not the first time it's happened to me. Can I back up and tell you how I met Kim?
You could share whatever you'd like.
I don't know how much time we have, but as you mentioned,
we have probably 10 minutes.
All right, I'll go fast. So I was married 20 years to this wonderful woman when I was living on autopilot, in the wrong career and the wrong everything for me, but raising a family and in my mid 40s, I had a midlife thing happen where I realized I'm in the wrong career. Hired a coach and I realized it wasn't just a career. Actually, as I started to become goal-oriented guy, she didn't like who I was becoming and we ended up divorcing. And I opened up my own business in 2007, 2008, 2009, the economy crashed. My fast growing business almost went bankrupt. And when it couldn't get any worse, my mom called me and told me that she had a lung disease. She found out she had lung disease and needed to get a lung transplant. And her doctor, she was living in Florida in near Destin. I know you're in Florida, but she was near Destin. They recommended she go to Duke in Durham, North Carolina for that procedure. And they would only take her as a patient if she had a family member live with her as a caregiver. So at 49 years old, I moved to Durham, North Carolina with my mom. And it was terrible. I was broke, divorced, and oh my gosh. And then when it couldn't get any work, that was terrible. Well, a few weeks into that, I met Kim on eHarmony. A few weeks later, my mom got a double lung transplant, and then she went home to Florida. And Kim and I had the most perfect, beautiful, amazing marriage for 9.5 years. Then she was diagnosed with ALS, and she died. So when I felt, after my year off and all that, I felt ready to dabble into maybe meeting people. I have my craziness. But I met on my birthday, March 13th, 2022, I met Tatiana on Match.com. And she had just moved here from Ukraine. Well, she moved to California and then moved here. Anyway, it's amazing. It's great. And we've been dating now a year and a half and engaged. And a whole new journey of a whole new love story of a thing I hadn't ever imagined. I'm 62. I feel great and very, 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 very thrilled to be in love again. She has a 15-year-old, so I'm raising a sophomore in high school, which is cool. And bring the Ukraine situation is, and then she has her best friends are in Israel right now. So it's like, the world's so full of mysteries, right? I reintroduced her to the American Christian Church and she fell in love with it, got a tattoo of faith on her arm. It's just like, I'm so aware of the unfoldingness of what can unfold. And I want to keep playing with this mystery of life until my time is called. And it could be a car wreck or it could be a long drag out disease or who knows.
I love what you just said, right? It is a mystery, right? It is, you know, so many people, and I think I this lesson was hard for me. You know, my dad is the most significant trauma, you know, for me in losing him. But I've watched, obviously, my mom lose her husband and other family members lose their spouses. And so I've seen, you know, how people deal with, I mean, one of the funerals that we went to this year was losing a 19-year-old. You know, they lost their child. And these terrible things happen in our lives. But I think if we, what I've come to learn is if we view this as the end all be all, right? Like, or this is who I am, or this is what I do. If there's these, I call them stakes in the ground, right? These barriers, like this is all I am. This is who I have. Life can become a very traumatic, painful existence where what you're talking about is life is a mystery that continually unfolds. And if you do look at it in a daily basis, and I think that's the lesson that can be imparted here on this episode, is what we're experiencing today is this is what's we're experiencing today. It doesn't define our future, doesn't dictate, right? It's not a result of our past. Well, I mean, I think actions lead up to certain things, but things happen in life that you can't control. God isn't smiting you because of what you did or didn't do. And I think it's that perspective of this is my daily bread, but it doesn't mean this is what I'm eating in the future kind of thing.
100%.
Yeah.
No, I don't know what comes, you know, you're familiar with the fixed mindset versus growth mindset. We think about that in terms of how we grow or not, but it's how we should look at our lives. We're not a fixed pole in the ground. We're moving around. And I don't know. I like, it's like jumping into a creek and letting it carry you down you don't know where it's going, but, or getting on a trolley bus and grabbing the handle. You have no idea where it's going, but smiling because you're going somewhere. That's kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
That's how I like to live life. Like, not out of control random, but having fun with the mystery of it.
You know, Brett, I want to thank you because I like to share moments. I think the big lesson for me is I have been saying that trauma never leaves. You learn how to deal with it. And I think that's true, that traumas are a part of our lives. But again, nothing has any meaning but the meaning we give it. We really do get to give meaning to the traumas that we experience. You can't, you know, my last podcast episode was titled, "None of Us Are Getting Out of This Alive," right? And none of us are getting out of this unscathed. But I think instead of dealing with trauma, I think it's important for me personally to say, these things happen, but they are not who you are today. If you categorize them properly, use them properly. I love what you said, right? Learn how to take the lessons from them to be a better person. But you don't have to live with your trauma for the rest of your life in how it can define you. And I think that's the big lesson for me personally. Because in the past I've had, you know, in recent past, there have been some traumatic things, and I've kind of been carrying them for a little while. But I think just being with you and reading your story, and now this conversation, is, I think God is trying to tell me personally this year, it's time to put those things down so that we can get on with the business of living, because who knows how long that's going to be as well.
No, oh, beautiful. And I would challenge it. Is it possible that traumas are stairways of growth?
Mm.
Like, the fact that you had several funerals in 1 year, that's really hard to say, but it's developing your strength of perseverance through those things. And it next year, you don't have to become end of the year weaker or damaged by it. You come in stronger because of it.
Right.
Ryan Holiday writes a book called The Obstacle is the Way. Beautiful book. That if we look at challenges as opportunities to grow, it could prepare us for even better future, not a damaged future.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's really
and
awesome.
Kim was the most amazing human being I've ever met. And I'm not comparing her but just beautiful human. I loved, she was an angel. But she got a terrible disease and she died, and she's in heaven. I'm here. And it's not disserving her for me to be happy and fulfilled and growing. I think she would be cheering me on. And so I don't know. I want to be able to grow through difficulties, encourage others to do the same thing.
I love it. I love it. Well, unfortunately, I have to cut us short, but
okay.
And we went for a long time, but I do like to ask, you know, what's the best way for people to find you and connect with you?
Yeah. I'm on LinkedIn under Brett Blair. My website is brettblairphd.com. BrettBlairPhd.com. And I'm on Facebook. And you can find my book, Born, Love, Die, on Amazon. I'm proud it made number one bestseller in nervous system disease the week it came out.
Mm.
I love meeting new people and talking to people. So please shoot me a note and I'll respond.
Do I have that right?
Brett Blair, PhD. That's right.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank Brett, you have been incredible. I truly hope whoever's listening, this impacts them, that they can apply it. I want them to connect with you guys. Get Brett's book, really, truly. There's a lot of lessons in there, and thank you for your transparency, bro. I think that is absolutely, it takes courage to do that. And you share a lot. I mean, you are incredibly transparent on what you were dealing with and how to get through it. And so I really do appreciate you doing that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I love what you're doing, John.
Thank you.
Good work in the world.
Thank
you. Alrighty.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to another episode of the Man Up Already podcast. We really do appreciate it. And I want to ask you to do a couple of things. Number one, subscribe to the podcast, whatever platform you're listening or viewing on, subscribe to the podcast, right? Help us, right? Continue to grow. by joining the community, and also rate the podcast, rate the episode, right? Whatever platform you're on, you could leave a rating. Let us know your comments. Let us know your thoughts. If you can do that, we really do want your feedback. You could head on over to manupalready.com and check out our website. All the podcast episodes are on there as well. But also join our community, sign up on our emailing list. We're going to get content out to you. There's also a free resource there for you when you do that. And pass it on, pass on the podcast, let people know, right, what we're up to, what we're about, speak about it. If you're a podcast enthusiast, please share episodes, tell people about what it is that we do. What we do here and what you like about it and what you don't like about it. And that's okay as well, right? It's just getting the word out. And then finally, I want to thank a great sponsor of our podcast, Master Beef Jerky. Their slogan is bold flavor, tender bite. If you head on over to masterbeefjerky.com, they've got incredible flavors there. But if you put in the coupon code MUAP, you will get 20% off your order. I highly recommend you check them out. Master Beef Jerky, bold flavor, tender bite, and a great, great sponsor of the podcast. Until next time, thanks so much for being here, and we'll talk to you soon.